What's happening?
Nothing. It's just, I think a furry snuck in and then he's scritching.
What's a
furry?
It's
not a big deal.
What's a furry?
A furry is simply just someone who likes to dress up like an animal with human characteristics. It's a form of role play. It's huge.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
But then the scritching thing you said, what is that?
Scritching is simply light scratching or grooming. It's a form of affection. Oh. Furries love to do it. It's just,
I do that.
It's fun for them.
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
We all do it.
But I was in the other room, and one of them kind of bumped into me. I thought the guy was going for my wallet, so I turned around real quick. It seemed different.
Did he yip or did he yiff?
He said skip, and I said, no, my name's Buddy.
Okay, he yipped. If he yipped, that means hello. If he yiffs, if that happens, well, then you got a problem.
It's, yeah, it's
a
you know what? Might have been yiff. Might have been yiff.
Well, if it happens again, just go, growth!
TBTL!
So is Donaghy going to be in the room again today?
Probably, yeah.
Well, you have to say something to him. You guys are not getting any work done.
Really? You don't think his idea of starting with the catchphrases and working backwards is panning out?
Nuts to you, McGillicuddy. Who ordered the wieners?
Beep, beep, ribby, ribby.
Oh, my God, man. We are seeing some shit we ain't never seen before.
I was just calling to complain because I'm a middle school teacher and... all day today, I had stuck in my head, Daddy, would you like some sausage?
Mmm. Well, you sure don't talk like a machine.
You better finish up that vacuuming. I'm going to have a hot mic in a minute. We're talking Garamond today.
Hey, Rudy. Get in here. It's time for The Thing.
The Thing, known as a Monday afternoon edition of TBTL, this is the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
I can't believe you're still on the air.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Four yeses and one hell yeah.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill.
Bring it back home, baby. Bring it back home.
I am so excited to be here in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, with the Pod Dog and the Bay Kitty and Carrie Beth.
That's my wife.
Man, it's been a whole week since I was able to do the show from here, and it feels good to be back here on a episode 2715 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Lots to talk about today on the program, including a full report on me finally driving the monster truck known as Gravedigger.
Trucks, trucks, and Trucktober!
Down in Florida this weekend. There was a big lead up, of course, talked about a lot on the show. It happened. And in a blink of an eye, it was over. And I'm still trying to kind of, I don't know, unpack my feelings about the whole thing. Carrie had to talk me down afterwards. No joke, because I was feeling really bummed out about things. So we'll talk about that.
That's my wife.
Also, we have some emails about slingshots. Youthful indiscretion with slingshots.
You'll shoot your eye out.
So we'll read through those. Some other emails and v-mails, I'm sure. And we'll talk to this guy, the longest running Cobro of the show. I think so far he's never missed a sausage fest. I hired him a million years ago. Isn't he the best? He can only hear Yanni. And he's just been pacing in the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington for this whole preamble. He's just been yipping and yiffing. He's Andrew.
I don't know who that is, and I don't care to find out.
Walsh, and he joins us now. Hello, my dude.
Hello, Luke. I missed one of your references. I didn't get it. You hired me a million years ago, and I'm just the best? What's that a reference to?
Yeah. That is actually Gene Parmesan.
Oh, Gene?
Yeah, isn't he the best? And she's always saying, oh, I hired him a million years
That's
ago.
That's right. Yeah, no, now I
to see
totally
if, here you go. Well, now we're going to do it. Now right. It's happening.
Great. Michael, this is your office now?
Yeah, well, it's temporary. We've got to make sure Job looks like he's in charge. Oh, please let me. I'll just circumvent you.
So I got a call today from Gene Parmesan, our private eye. He said he found something big.
We have a private eye, huh?
Oh, I hired him 100 years ago to find out if your father was cheating on me. He never did find anything.
Well, he can't be very good then.
When is this? I mean, we've done versions of this many, many times on the show. I mean, we're obsessed with Arrested Development, have always been. But, I mean, when do we just start playing Arrested Development you know, full episodes and calling that the show. Because honestly, that's what we just played is has more comedy packed into it than anything else we're going to do.
Well, I ran the idea past legal. They said, do what you want. We're pretty laid back up here in the legal department.
Yeah.
So
that's my experience.
So the, no hurdles there. And then, I mean, what do you think it would do for the numbers?
Oh, I mean, let's just say they couldn't be lower.
That's a good point.
So that's good.
They won't plunge. We tried watching, I still have not gotten through the last season of Arrested Development, that season 5 that dropped not that long ago. I put it on, like, late at night a couple of times this weekend. Like, Veeves and I have kind of given up on even trying to, like, really follow the thread. It's so overly complicated and overly narrated.
Even this season?
Have you tried
didn't
it?
I haven't. In fact, I don't think I knew it was out. And, of course it's out. That's what all the publicity was. Mm-hmm. Surrounding when all the Jeffrey Tambor stuff went down, they were promoting the fifth season. Oh. Didn't they do a thing where they were smart enough to shoot, you know, kind of in the more old-fashioned way where everybody was actually in the scenes together? Are they still dealing with that thing where they're trying to, like, build a whole episode around one person?
It's definitely better. No, they've solved for that problem. They got, you know, a lot of the main characters together for a lot of scenes, so you sort of have that, but they just... Listen, that show was made a long time ago. I'm not trying to harsh anybody's buzz who loves season 5. I hope you do get more enjoyment out of it than I do. But it just, you know, whatever was there, they tried to recapture it with season 4, and had those issues, like you said, the production issues of getting people in the same place. And then by season 5, they tried to correct for that, and there are definitely some funny moments. I mean, there are definitely, like, there are some scenes where maybe dresses up like an old woman to be in, or an older woman, like they would say a woman of a certain age to be in a assisted care facility or some sort of a nursing home, and that she is just brilliant. She's hilarious, but it still just sort of sags under the weight of its own internal references. Instead of jokes being funny on their own and then continued throughout, they're just kind of like, I can't explain it. Like, here's an example that Genevieve was talking about this week, this weekend when we were talking about it. Like, remember there was a whole joke when she was a younger girl acting older and pretending to be a film exec. She would say, marry me. And it was hilarious because it was her saying something that a woman of a certain age would say, and then it kind of got her in trouble. Now she says, bury me. Because she's supposed to be even older. See, I think that's kind of like, that is only funny as a reference to the original joke, but it doesn't have any real, I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old man. See, you laughed at that. You know, jokes are difficult for me to
bury me, you know? That's what I always say.
Yeah.
Otherwise, how was your weekend, man?
It was great. I'd rather, it was very restful. It was fun. No, Facebook, that seems to be going well.
In our world, this is a big deal. I forgot that you went off of Facebook during Friday's episode, and you went the whole weekend?
Oh, yeah.
Stayed off?
Oh, yeah. Not too much to report there. And actually, with your Ford promo about what happened with you over the weekend, I'm really excited to hear about that. So I don't want to babble too much about either Arrested Development Season 5 or my Facebook thing. But I will say one... You know, I'm glad to be off of Facebook. So far, so good. I will say this is how bad my kind of Facebook addiction and megalomania got. There were
not to be confused with Megalodon, one of the monster trucks that I almost drove on Saturday,
really?
Which is a giant prehistoric shark.
Whoa! That's okay. We got to.
Which is also when I learned that's what the Meg means. The Meg is short for Megalodon, which is a prehistoric shark.
Yes, and then that's that new movie, which, and I think I already mentioned this to you, that my mother-in-law's name is Meg. So every time I see the Meg, I think of like kind of classic and probably inappropriate mother-in-law jokes from the 1950s.
I had no idea what the Meg was a reference to. Like, I knew it was talking about a shark, but I didn't know why it was called the Meg. And then I was standing on, like, a dirt floor in an arena in Tampa, and I looked over at a giant shark monster truck, Megalodon, and I was like, oh, that's why the Meg is called the Meg. That's how I find out most of my information, is if it's painted on the side of a monster truck.
Right. And I find out most of my information through Genevieve, who told me why it's called the Meg. It's not about a shark named Margaret, who's a little sassy.
I know. I honestly think that it's kind of like... not that we need to make this a talk about that movie, which I haven't seen. Although now you know, I would consider seeing it because I've been indoctrinated into the world of going to see so-called popcorn movies. But The Meg is a kind of a subtle, or you know, it's not a super intimidating name for this Megalodon, but I wonder if they decided that Megalodon was too complicated for people.
Yeah.
So they just went with the Meg. Although the Monster Truck folks, Feld Entertainment, they think people are ready for Megalodon.
Yeah.
They were. People were very excited about that truck.
But yeah, my megalomania, I would say, got to the point where a couple of times on Friday, I would instinctively take my phone out and, you know, almost go to Facebook because I was interested to see if anybody was commenting on the fact that I quit Facebook. Like, that is an embarrassing goddamn thing to admit, but that is the truth. And it was just like one of those instinctual things. And I was like, wow, this really proves how much I need to get off Facebook, that I am trying to see if people are talking about the fact that I'm not on Facebook. That is just cringeworthy. And then I woke up on Sunday. I think it was Sunday morning. I woke up and I'm flipping through Twitter. And I said to Vives, God, maybe I should get off of Twitter. It was only for a second. I read something. It's two media people kind of battling out in a way that I just found stressful.
On Twitter?
Yeah. And then I don't want to kind of get into it. But then I was like kind of fighting with the one person in my head for like the next 2 hours. I like woke up, read this beef. I think the one person is completely off base. And so, you know, I'm just like taking a shower. And I realize I'm still just fighting with her in my head. And it's like an hour and a half later or something, I told Visa, I'm like, I'm exhausted. I've been fighting with this person in my head over a fight that I have nothing to do with on Twitter.
I'd like to grow a pair sometime. Yeah.
It's funny. He was – that voice is a tertiary character in the thing I'm talking about. But –
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, but anyway, putting all of that aside, I made some kind of like, maybe I should get off Twitter too, kind of half-jokingly. And then over brunch, Vives and I were trying to figure out where a movie theater was. We're looking at Google Maps, and we went on this whole thing. It's like, you know, maybe I should just get off of Google Maps. Like, I'm just like – I'm constantly like trying to figure out where things are. I'm just like putting red pins everywhere. Like, our brains were not evolved to handle Google Maps. So anyway, that was my weekend. Me joking around with Genevieve about my social media addiction. But yeah, no, it feels good. I'm glad to kind of be off that site. I honestly think it will make me better on TBTL because I won't be in my head so much. Get ready for a lot more hot takes, Luke. I'm going to be just sprinkling hot takes all over this podcast now, knowing that I don't have to like.
I'd like to grow a pair sometime.
Face the backlash online.
I am, as I've already mentioned in a few different ways, I am freshly back from Tampa. I got back late last night, and I was telling you before we started recording that I just am like in a daze, and I don't really know why, because I got enough sleep last night. Maybe it's a little bit of a time zone thing, but apologies if my brain is moving a little slow today for some reason, and again, I don't really know why it is, but I am ecstatic to be back here. I'll be here, I think, all week pretty much, so that's kind of cool. It's, you know, it's fine doing the show from the road, and I appreciate the amount of extra effort that you often put in with that, Andrew, on the technical side, because it's kind of a pain, and I know half the time people don't really know this, but like half the time you probably can't even hear me because my voice is coming down the line in a kind of a warbly fashion because I'm on some slow Wi-Fi on the Outer Banks, and then you splice in the good recording of me later. So anyway, I like doing the show from the road fine, but just sitting here talking to you from behind this microphone, this to me feels like this is what TBTL is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Just speaking completely selfishly. So anyway, I'm stoked to be here this week. I think what we should do is take our little break, and then when we come back, I can tell you about the whole lead up to me actually driving the monster truck. And it's funny because I think Facebook actually plays a slight role in this, Andrew, in my sort of bad feelings I was having about it. But I'll tell you all of that in just a moment. First, though, a short break, and then we will return with much more TBTL.
Heaven is a truck. It got stuck on the breeze.
Trucks, and Trucktober.
Has to drive nicely. I need a lift. Sand in the boats.
We gotta let it get to the cool part.
Rose covered flows. She is the queen of the Pasadena thrill.
What is he singing about there? She is the queen of the
of a house.
I always sing it as Cass.
I always thought he says Pasadena, but he says like Casa. I don't know. She is the queen of a house in Casadena. Is Casadena a place?
In the mind of Steve Malkmus, it is.
I'll look it up.
God, I know what I'm going to be listening to all day. Carrie's down in Seattle today and tonight. And so I've got the house to myself, and I'd love to just play. I just play all of the music that I feel like she sort of tolerates.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's a good sport about things, but it's like, I don't think, you know, she wants to hear like the 11th track off of, you know, like a, what's it? Wowie Zowie?
Yeah. Or no, no, this is the other one, but, this,
right,
is
Crooked Rain.
Crooked Rain. Yeah.
Like listen, every song on Crooked Rain, I always have one. I've made this reference or this comment many, many times on the show about how like most Pavement songs have a really good part and a really bad part in the same song. But each song on Crooked Rain, there's a moment in that song that I just love and look forward to so much. So I listen to every single track, each one for its own little moment that I'm excited about.
What, so apparently, I mean, I've been listening to this song for 15 years or whatever. No, oh God, more than that.
Way more, way longer. I heard Crooked Rain. I was like a freshman in college, I think. And I don't even think, I think it'd been out for a while.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it as college or maybe late high school. I don't know. Anyway, let's not think about that.
No, let's not.
Oh, actually, God. Well, never mind.
93. I was a junior in high school.
Yeah, and I know I didn't listen to this when it was
new, I'm sorry, actually.
I think I
recorded in 93, released on Valentine's Day, 94.
Okay.
And I was probably disappointing a high school girlfriend on the day that this was released. Actually, not true. Not true. I was 3 days from becoming a father.
Oh, wow. So this is what the lyrics are.
It's good to laugh.
This, I almost used that as an intro today. The sand in the boat on the rose-covered floats. She is the queen of a canceled Pasadena thrill.
Yeah, that's great. That's about the Rose Parade. The New Year's Day Pasadena Rose Parade.
But
that's a great line, actually.
She is the queen of a canceled Pasadena thrill. But I've heard that a million times. I never would have guessed that that's what... Can I just go back and listen to it one more time here?
Yeah, I love that, though. Like, that's a good lyric.
I don't know if I get it. I know arcs can't fly. Oops, I passed it. We're going to do this one more time. Here we go. Lift. Sand in the boats on a rose-covered floats. She is the queen of the Pasadena thrill. Wow, I still don't quite hear it that way. I think he's singing over top of himself or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, a canceled
Pasadena thrill.
I love
that line,
thrill.
Though. I mean, I read it to just be the sort of idea of the fakeness of the Rose Parade. Mm. And this kind of, you know, beauty queen waving, you know, from the top of a rose-covered float with this sand in the boats, you know, like they built this elaborate float, basically. And it's an idea of a way of life that's probably sort of outmoded in Steve Malkmus's mind, which I kind of dig it. Although I do also like that parade.
It's all artifice. That's what Steve Malkmus wants us to know. It's all just artifice.
Yeah. He's actually, I think, one of the first artists to point that out. And that's what I admire
about
him.
Yeah. So, yeah. He was the only artist in the 90s to point it out, I think.
The Stone Temple Pilots, they're elegant bachelors. They're foxy to me. Are they foxy to you?
That. Yes.
Carrie works with a woman named Chalice. And every time she says her name, I go, taste my chalice. It's a special one. Like, I can't not think of the Pavement song.
Yeah.
When chalice is ever mentioned.
Definitely keep that one to yourself, though, when you're talking to Chalice.
Oh, yeah. Is that a sexual reference?
No, I don't know. It just seems like it would just seem like. No, I think he's talking about a chalice, right? But I would
right.
just say,
That's
like, don't talk about tasting your wife's friends.
Oh, yeah. This is apropos of nothing, and then we'll start with the story. Saw a great joke from The Onion today. White House releases moving statement honoring woman who called Obama an Arab in 2008.
That's a pretty good one.
Spoof.
Yep.
Pretty good spoof.
So tell me about this. I want to know why you were feeling, why Carrie had to talk you down, and why you were feeling bummed about your trucks.
Well, so let me see. I'm trying to figure out the right amount of detail and what is too much detail and what is not enough. And again, I'm operating with some brain fog today, so everybody bear with me. So I went to Tampa on Friday night, and then Saturday we got up really early. We went down to the Amalie Oil Arena, which is also where the Tampa Bay Lightning play. And where
what are they?
The hospital, the hockey.
Okay.
you know, hockey, a traditional Tampa sport.
Right, it was born
there. I mean, to me, it's like, and peace and love. I actually went to a great restaurant in Tampa called Ulele, which was really good. So, and I mean, Tampa's got some cool stuff. We've got listeners in Tampa, so I don't want to. I sort of badmouthed Tampa one time, and I felt bad about it. I said it was like if Guy Fieri and a jet ski had a baby, and that was unnecessary. But I will say that something about hockey in Tampa, like, you know, it's like hockey in San Jose. Hockey in a place that's generally warm, it always just feels. It feels very Tampa to me. And the fact that we went in the hospitality suite where we were having us watch the daytime show. So there was a day show of this thing called Monster Jam. Then there was a night show. And I drove around in the night show. Or actually a little bit before the night show. But we were in the hospitality suite. And they had these like chafing dishes of food. Although there was no food out. These were just like the signs from when there had been food in the hospitality suite. And one of the things they had been offering at some point were something called shrimp jammers, which just felt like the most Tampa food to me. Like eating a shrimp jammer in this hospitality suite at a Tampa Bay Lightning game just feels like peak Tampa to me. But
they were good, though. Didn't you say that they were good on Twitter?
I didn't actually eat them. I did a joke based on the William Carlos Williams plum in the – I ate the plums that were in the icebox. Poem, but mine was I ate the shrimp jammers. Actually, that was the second joke I made about it. The first joke I made was I said, everybody stop asking me if I tried the shrimp jammers. They were out. And then I rethought it. And I thought a better joke is to make it like that poem, a meme that's already kind of come and gone. And so I did that. And I erased the first joke like it never happened. And if any of you out there who retweeted the first joke, if you tell anyone that my shrimp jammers joke on Twitter is my second shrimp jammers joke, auto block. I will automatically block you.
Dude, you got to get off Google Maps. It's effing with your head.
Can people see when you block them? They know when they're blocked on Twitter, right?
I don't know. I mean, I find it hard to believe that nobody's ever blocked me, yet I've never noticed that I've been blocked by anybody.
I'm wondering.
I think you can't
interact with their tweets. You have to know. Let me block you real quick. Because tell me if you can see it.
Okay, you've seen people like post like the notifications like, you know, Donald Trump is now blocking you.
I was blocked by
you.
Trump or something.
Yeah. But I don't know how.
I think you get a notification because otherwise it wouldn't make any sense. You would be able to see their stuff and tweet at them, but you can't see their stuff or tweet at them when you're blocked, I believe.
But you probably have to go to their website? Like, go to their feed. So, like, here, did you block me yet? I'm trying to. Come on, Dashlane.
I didn't, actually. I don't know.
Come on,
Dashlane. I don't know how to find you in here. It doesn't matter. This is not good.
Right, I think that would. I don't know if I'll get a notification or not.
Anyway, I was thinking. Let me see here. Hold on. I'm going to block you really quick. I just blocked you.
Okay.
And
so,
Andrew Walsh has been blocked.
Oh, shit. By the way, I learned something about this that I think almost everybody, like especially the youngs listening, already know.
What if I just left you blocked?
You could.
If this was an elaborate scheme to block you, and you're like, okay, you can unblock me now. Oh, I keep forgetting. Oh, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll get to that, man.
When I search for you, it says you follow each other, and then when I click on you, it says you are blocked from following Luke Burbank and viewing his tweets. I'm going to go ahead and just screen cap this before you can undo it, and then I will use this in my lawsuit against you as a coworker. How can I do my job when he's blocking me?
I was thinking of blocking this person. I mean, it doesn't even matter. It's so dumb. The thing to do on Twitter if somebody does a dumb comment is just ignore it. But like, I wrote this joke that actually we didn't talk about it. But I wrote this a picture of my nephew Daniel where they just like propped him up in like in the woods, like under a tree, and it looks like he's standing, but he's really little.
Somebody famous like retweeted that, right? That went viral.
I think a lot of people. I think Justine Bateman did, and I don't actually know. It got retweeted like 1,000 times, and it got liked like.
I thought
lot,
it was like 1,100 times. Was it? I would tell you, maybe. Except I'm blocked on your thing.
It's working. Anyway, that tweet it got a lot of retweets and things like that, which was just kind of funny because like I was walking to the bathroom at the campsite and I saw the picture and I thought it was funny and I dashed it off, and then wouldn't you know, that'd be like, I guess, arguably the most popular tweet I've ever written. But somebody, and I said, the joke I made was, because again, he looks like an old man, but also a baby. And I said, today, something to the effect of, today we found out that my nephew Daniel is actually a 1,000-year-old man who's lived in these woods since before time. Please respect our privacy during this difficult moment or something. And somebody like the other day responded to me and was like, if you wanted us to respect, if you wanted privacy, you wouldn't have posted this or something. Like, they just completely missed the joke. And they're not a person who follows me. They're less, I mean, the tweet has gone so far and wide that it's, you know, many, many people that are not part of my world who are, like, responding to me with it or whatever. And I wanted to block the person, but then I was like, this me blocking this person is putting way more oxygen into this fire than it needs to have.
Right, especially when you have that kind of a ratio, that many people who've looked at it. I mean, you're going to get – I mean, you just look – again, right, I know we've said this before, but, like, you just look at Chris Hayes and, like, he just tweets something out. And it's just like – I'm not trying to diminish the quality of his tweets. Your tweets are very good, Chris. But, you know, they're
– although apparently his wife is no fan of the show, we learned.
I know. That was so – he texted us a video of him dancing with his youngest child, who's probably only like, what, born around January, December, I think. So very young. Dancing in the kitchen to the Song of the Summer playlist. By the way, you can vote at tbtl.net for the penultimate round here. And he said, we started with Drake, but my wife, not a fan. She said, who is this? I don't like it. Is that correct?
Oh, good. Oh, see, I when I saw the video, I was on my phone somewhere. I couldn't watch the video.
Mm-hmm.
So his wife was saying she didn't like the Drake music. She wasn't saying she didn't like TBTL.
I believe just the Drake song, yeah.
Oh, basically, that's so much better.
Yeah, I had sent him a note saying, hey, you're going to have to talk to your kiddo about the fact that the 10s already killed the Drake song. It's going to be a really tough, you know, father, I assume son, maybe daughter conversation.
I have to. I'm actually relieved. I thought that Kate was no fan of our show. I was going to be heartbroken.
She's probably a huge fan of our show. I mean, I heard she's on the bubble with you, but she's a big
fan.
Has
she unblocked me on Twitter yet?
I don't know. I would tell you, but I can't get into your account.
I actually unblocked you already.
Oh, you did? Oh, there it is.
We're good. Yeah, you know.
Wait, why did we get on this?
I would have put one of those things. What was that meme? That meme where the guy was like, me and this guy are no longer friends, and there's like a big Ghostbuster through them. And then it was like, then they became friends again, and they were shaking hands. Right. Now we're friends again.
Yay.
How
did we end up on this, though, Luke? I'm very confused.
Well,
why are we talking about Twitter and Chris Hayes, and what's going on?
So I'm in Tampa because of the shrimp jammers. Tampa. We go to the day show, and it starts off with there's a thing called the pit party. And so all these monster trucks are parked kind of in the middle of the arena on this big mound of dirt. And kids and families come in, and they get to meet the drivers of these various trucks, things like Zombie. The guy who drives Zombie is actually an interesting story. He's a young guy, and he was driving RC monster trucks like in the at one of these Monster Jam events. He was just there, I think, driving an RC version of them for fun. Like, he was not hired, I don't think, by the company. And somebody saw him driving the truck and was like, the pretend truck, was like, you might be able to drive the real truck. And so they brought him in. You had Zombie. You had Megalodon, already mentioned, the big shark. You had the Scooby-Doo truck. You had Gravedigger. You had Max Destruction, a.k.a. Max D. I asked one little kid, what's your favorite truck? And he said, Max D. And I said, why? He goes, because he's spiky. Because it's like a truck that has like spike armor on it. And then there's something called Black Ops Special Forces, which is almost like a modified Humvee.
Mm-hmm.
And my joke the whole weekend was the U.S. government will deny the existence of this monster truck
because
it's Black Ops. So the plan was go in there and then watch the daytime performance, and then in between the daytime performance and the nighttime performance, they were going to let me get in a truck, or they were actually going to require me to get in a truck and drive a couple laps around the stadium thing, the arena, to make sure I could still do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay. And this is a huge operation, this Monster Jam thing. I mean, it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people involved, and there's all these different levels of authority. And so we're just spending a lot of time waiting around for various people to approve something happening at a certain point. Like, now they're ready for you to come out and do this thing or whatever. So I started to get pretty nervous, I don't know, around midday when I watched what the real Monster Jam drivers were doing. Like, they do a race around this big kind of jump in the middle, and they're driving so fast. Those things go 0 to 60 in, like, under 4 seconds. And so they're going really fast, and they have independent steering. So the back wheels and the front wheels are steered. The front wheels are steered with a steering wheel, and the back wheels are steered with a switch, a toggle switch. And so you can make the thing spin. Like, you can do donuts and stuff in it. So it's finally about time for me to go out and do my practice drive. And we're walking out, and they go, oh, you're not going to drive Gravedigger. It's not set up now. We're going to have you drive Black Ops Special Forces. And I was like, oh, that's the only one I really don't want to drive. Like, I'm just
because it looks
vibe.
More complicated or because of the just the branding of it?
I really wanted to drive Gravedigger because I think Gravedigger is the Hulk Hogan monster truck.
Yeah, I mean, that's
like
from our
arguably
youth.
The most, yeah, like it's the most famous, maybe with the exception of Bigfoot, who they don't have the contract with. So like as far as the monster trucks I could be driving, Gravedigger is the most famous one. And by the way, I went to North Carolina and I interviewed the guy who invented Gravedigger, Dennis Anderson, and he's a sweetheart. It was really funny. Just like he's just a kind of an interesting guy and a character. You'll see if you guys see the TV piece when it's all done. But I was like, I really had my heart set on driving Gravedigger. Like that was going to be. And so I throughout the whole first performance, what they said to me was, if Gravedigger is in one piece after the daytime show, you can drive it in the nighttime show. Because these things get broken all the time. Mm-hmm. They did a parade. Literally, they drive in a circle at the beginning of the show, right? And Scooby-Doo does like one lap. It's not even going fast. And all of a sudden, just like I don't know what the term is. You could just say the bottom of the engine just vomits out some weird blue substance. Mm. And they announce Scooby-Doo's motor has blown up.
Whoa.
Like, in driving in a circle, $250,000 truck, the engine just toast. So they had to like haul it out of there, and they spent the next like 6 hours furiously putting a new engine in, and they had it ready in time for the night show, which is totally crazy.
God, I love that.
Like these pit crews are just like they're insanely good at what they do. But so anyway, the thing was if Gravedigger is in one piece after the daytime show, then you can drive it for the nighttime show. And I was like, yes, this will just be more iconic. I'll get to tell everyone I drove Gravedigger. It'll be a big deal. We were walking out to the dirt. I'm in the suit. I'm all ready to go. It's as before the nighttime show starts, they're going to let me do a practice run. And at this moment, it is revealed to me that, in fact, I'm supposed to go drive Black Ops Special Forces, which I have no emotional connection to. And is like of all of the trucks, the one I am least interested in driving. And it was just because of something of where it was positioned, like on the floor. And I was like, no. It's got to be Gravedigger. And in my mind, I'm like, I got to come up with a reason why it should be Gravedigger. Mm. And so I say, all the interviews I did this morning, I talked about the fact that I'm going to drive Gravedigger, which is, by the way, true. And I was like, so the story will not make sense if I don't drive Gravedigger. That was a slight overstatement.
Interjection here. Are you making this case to your producers so that they will then...
My producer is in the wind at this moment, funnily enough. I don't know where he was. He was maybe setting up a camera. So this is me negotiating with the guy who's like almost the head of the whole organization. And a guy who no one ever disagrees with that I've seen, because he's an important guy there. He's a very nice fellow, actually. But he's like pretty high up the food chain. It goes him and then like Megalodon is the apex predator of these people. So I'm kind of like, and this is in front of like 20 people, because of course there's just like, it takes so many people for any of this stuff to happen that like I'm sort of like, we're not having it out in any way, shape, or form, but I am basically contradicting his stated wishes in front of 20 people wearing my Monster Jam driving suit. And I'm just like, God, I hope this works out. And he goes, well, the seat's really narrow in Gravedigger. And I'm like, I got slender hips. Let me try. So they let me get in Gravedigger. And I, to be honest with you, the seat was pretty narrow. It wasn't the most comfortable fit, but I was like, I'm going to wedge my butt into this seat, because I want to be driving Gravedigger. And so, in fact, I was allowed to do it. I did the practice run. Practice run was a dream. I zipped around the big jump in the middle of the floor a couple times, came back. Everybody was like, hey, man, you're a natural. You got this down. I was like, yes. But then as the real performance got closer and closer, I started to get really nervous, because now the stadium was starting to fill up with more people. It was more – I wasn't driving in the real show, but I was driving basically like 10 minutes before the real show started. So there were still, you know, there were some people in the stadium. And what actually had me maybe feeling really nervous was they have these hosts, Andrew, who are like – they're the announcers for the event. It's an attractive young man and an attractive young woman. They could be working, you know, at Disneyland or something. Like they're those kinds of like fresh scrubbed, you know, kind of just like – I don't know, clean, youthful, wholesome people who are very excited about Monster Jam, if you can believe it. Mm-hmm. And they run around and they interview the drivers and they tell people about buying official Monster Jam merchandise. And they're just the sort of, and they're on TV the whole time on the Diamond Vision or whatever you call it. So what I see, what I didn't realize until I'm about to get in the truck, is that they're going to come interview me after I get done doing my lap. So I'm like, oh shit. Like I got to have some material ready to go. Mm-hmm. I want to say something funny and memorable, because also CBS will be filming me being filmed by the Monster Jam crew.
This is
and
the most postmodern monster trucks have ever gotten, this whole situation.
Absolutely.
Right here.
Yes. My crew filming their crew filming right. me jumping out right. of Gravedigger. I made the joke to someone, my oft-used joke for these kinds of things. I was like, if we have one more camera crew filming our camera crew, the universe folds in on itself, mm-hmm. so we need to watch that. So I finally get in the truck, and I'm just sitting there, and it's oddly intense because all the music's going. They're in the show, the part of the show where they're interviewing the drivers before the drivers, like they're in the stands with the drivers. And now I'm talking to John so-and-so from the Super Mutt Patrol or whatever, you know, and then the person says something very, like, affirmative and excited. Yeah, we're just going to give them a great show. And I want to salute all the veterans. By the way, the guy who drove Special Ops unironically gave a shout out to Space Force at one point during the show. I've never heard Space Force deployed as a non-punchline, which shows you the liberal bubble I live
in.
Yeah,
right.
I've never heard Space Force spoken of in the positive.
Right.
It was quite something.
I believe it.
But so anyway, so they're doing this. They're interviewing the drivers. The drivers are all getting hyped. Everyone's hyped. It's a little bit like a wrestling match. And I'm just sitting in Gravedigger. And I'm just like, I can't believe I'm sitting in Gravedigger right now. And when they point at me, I have to turn this thing on. Oh, by the way, another little element. When I did the training in Illinois, I had a radio in my helmet, and I could hear a guy telling me what to do all the time as far as the switches and stuff. The helmet they got me didn't have a radio in it.
Oh.
So I was on my own to try to remember the steps of driving this truck. And those steps include flipping a series of switches, pulling out this one kind of retract, I don't know what you'd call it. It's like a sliding, sort of a sliding pull, a thing you pull out that turns on the gas flow and one that turns on the power. And then there's another button to hit. And then there's a remote control in the truck where they can turn the truck off remotely. And if they do that, then you have to reset that little mechanism. So this is all stuff I'm trying to remember how to do. And I know that if I get out there and I somehow kill the truck, or worse, if I pull a Scooby-Doo, I've now seen it established that you could blow up the engine just driving in a circle. Like, if I blow up Gravedigger, there are going to be however many thousand fans are at this thing. They are going to be pissed. The guy from the TV station, who they don't know who that is, the guy from the TV station blew up Gravedigger, and now we couldn't watch. Like,
right.
We couldn't enjoy
Children
Gravedigger.
Children are crying.
Like, honestly, it would have ruined the time of a bunch of people. So I got this in my head, and I'm just sitting there, and I feel myself almost starting to hyperventilate. I can't figure out how to open the mask on the helmet, like the visor. I have closed the visor, and I've somehow inadvertently locked it, and the visor is starting to steam up because I'm like, I'm breathing so hard, just knowing that in a matter of moments, they're going to say, and now from CBS TV, it's Luke Burbank, or whatever. Those hosts are going to say that, and now it's going to be go time, and what if I forget how to drive the truck, or what if I stall it, or whatever. And the other thing I hadn't accounted for was during the practice, I drove around the dirt mound. Well, in between the practice and the real show, they bring out a junker car that they've freshly painted that will be smashed by the monster trucks. And now this junker car is sitting at the base of the jump and sticking out into the area where I'm supposed to drive. And so now I'm like, oh, shit, don't hit the junker car, because, like, that's not my right as as just like a TV person. Like, that's for the real drivers to use in their, like, you know, in their act. Like, that just felt like bad form. So finally, they announced my name. I think, I don't know, I wasn't looking, but I was told there's a headshot of me where they superimpose my body onto a driving suit. So it looked like I'm like one of the drivers. And it's like I turn on the truck and I drive out there at what feels to me, Andrew, like a breakneck pace.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to make a good impression on the crowd. This crowd is so excited that Gravedigger is operating. That's what they're there to see. This is the first monster truck this crowd has seen at this event that is turned on, which is an exciting moment. And it's not just any monster truck. It's Gravedigger, the famous one. So it's like I want to live up to their expectations. So I'm trying to go as fast as I can without hitting anything. So I do my first – I'm trying to balance the show-off demon that is well-documented on this show of wanting those people to be like, this guy's pretty good. Is this the real Gravedigger driver?
Get rid of the regular one. I want this guy to drive Gravedigger.
Get rid of Tyler.
Yeah.
We don't care that Tyler can do a nose wheelie for over a minute. Let's get the guy from the TV station out there. Let's get the middle-aged dad from the TV station. We don't care that Tyler's impossibly handsome. Tyler Meninga, Anyway, so I'm trying to go fast, but I'm also deathly afraid of hitting something and making like and messing something up for somebody. I also saw Megalodon in the first show popped a tire. So I know that's a possibility. Like if I drive into the stands, the whole ground, like the right next to the field area is blocked. There's no people there. They've got like tarps set up because they don't want anyone getting hit, obviously. So I could have conceivably driven into the chairs or something, the seats. So I do the first loop. It's sort of uneventful. I'm trying to go fast. But what I'm really thinking is do the first loop, get comfortable, and then try to really go for it on the second loop. So I do. And on the second pass around the car, I think I'm either going to hit the car, so I swerve to the right, but now I think I'm going to drive into the stands because I'm going a little bit out of control for me. And neither one of these is a good outcome, and I realize, oh, shit, I have to stop the monster truck. I have to stop Gravedigger, put it in reverse, and back it up, and then take it again. Like, I basically messed up the second loop, which was really embarrassing. And I think definitely ruined my chances of becoming the new driver of Gravedigger. But then really the worst part of the whole thing was when I finally finished and I park, I couldn't get the door open for what felt like an eternity. I get the helmet off. I finally get the door open. I jump out of the truck. I was told one of the hosts was going to come interview me, but I'm going around the wrong end of the truck. She comes running out and we're doing like a weird fire drill where I'm running around the truck trying to get to her and she's running around the truck trying to get to me. It's not very elegant. Finally, she's talking to me and like, how do I say this in a nice way? These hosts are very nice. They're good at their job. They're good at doing what needs to happen for this show to really go. But I don't feel like she actually is interested in my answer to the questions, and I don't feel like her questions are going to set me up to say anything interesting. It's very general what goes on with these interviews. So she says to me, oh, you got to go back to Monster Jam University. I meant to say, oh, yeah, Monster Jam University was my safety school. But I totally forgot my joke because, Andrew, I was so adrenalized from driving the truck that I was shaking. I was physically shaking. Like it was as if I had drank 4 gallons of coffee sweetened with cocaine or something. I mean, I understand. I'm not trying to compare myself to like a Richard Sherman, but I understand why Richard Sherman went crazy in that one interview famously and was like, don't you ever talk to me, about whatever he says. I actually have the rant somewhere. People can remember it. They were
Crabtree, right?
They
he was know. Going after Crabtree and he was talking to who was the sideline reporter.
I forget the sideline reporter in question, but I understand that kind of
don't you ever talk about me!
I understand that kind of like weird unhinged quality in a way I never did before because I just got done doing this thing that was making me, it was super scary for me to do. And it was just, again, all I can say is there was so much adrenaline when I jumped out of the truck that then when she puts the mic in my face, I just start talking nonsense. Mm-hmm. Like I honestly, I don't even remember what I said, but at some point I started totally pandering to the audience, saying like what I wanted to say was something like, this is way harder than it looks. And I have a lot of respect for the people that drive these things. But it became quasi, I think I just said like the brave men and women who drive these things. It almost was like, thank you for your service. Oh. I mean, it was just a weird, my voice was like 4 octaves higher than it normally is. I couldn't control my breathing or what I was saying or how I was saying it. And so she asked me one question. I give her some crazy answer. She, I think, asked me another question. I don't know what I said, something else. And then I just yelled Baba Booey and ran off.
Did
I just
you really?
Yelled Baba Booey. Yeah. I yelled Baba Booey and just jogged away from her.
I know one listener of this show who is going to be very pleased by this outcome.
Oh, believe me, I texted Phyllis immediately. I yelled Baba Booey and ran, and she still had like 2 more questions for me, and I just didn't care. I just ran for the tunnel because I realized that I made a joke about peeing my pants. She said, oh, you had a practice run. How did this compare to the practice run? And I said, probably in a very high, fluttery voice, I said, well, the difference is I didn't pee myself a little during the practice run, which is an edgy joke at that place.
Hear the crowd reacting?
No. And that's also what was getting to me. First of all, there wasn't a huge crowd yet because it was still before the show really started. And it's like these folks are not they're not there to see Luke Burbank get interviewed. And this is my most uncomfortable thing always, is if I'm ever having attention paid to me in a setting where I know that the crowd is not there for me. Like, I want their pain to be as minimized as possible. Mm-hmm. I just want to answer the questions pretty succinctly and get out of their hair. Because, again, no one's like, oh, cool. Oh, Luke Burbank from CBS Sunday Morning was there. Nobody's into that. So, and I was really debating if I should yell Baba Booey or not. I was thinking about yelling hit him with the hein, which is a different, that's the cool, newer version of Baba Booey. But I honestly don't remember what I said, but I just said a bunch of weird, meaningless stuff about how awesome the drivers are. And then, oh, you know what else I tried to say? This is when I knew the interview wasn't going to go well. She asked me about my time at Monster Jam University, and I said, well, I'm just surprised this truck is still in one piece after what I put it through. And she just looked at me, total blank stare, like she had no idea that I was joking.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the crowd knew I was joking, so then I started to be like, ah, shit. And then I tried to get the crowd back on my side by saying something effusive about the drivers, but it sounded quasi-religious or militaristic in some way and totally pandering. And then I made a joke about peeing my pants, which did not go over well with the host. And then I just yelled Baba Booey and ran.
That's quite an adventure. You know, I have nothing as high stakes that I've been put in that situation, but I know 100% that feeling of pure adrenaline and nerves combining so that you feel like you're out of your own body. I can't remember the last yes. time I felt that way, but as somebody, I think this is interesting because this and the boat story, although the boat story hits on some different things, but like this story in particular, I've never heard you, I don't think I've ever heard you tell a story where you're so clearly so nervous and feel in over your head. Because like you threw out a first pitch at Safeco Field before a Mariners game.
Yeah.
And like that to me, I would have had that feeling after that, whether the ball made it to the plate or not. I know that I would have been shaking for about the next 2 hours. The first probably five conversations I would have had after that, I would have been out of my mind and they wouldn't have made any sense. But you didn't have that phenomenon then, did you?
No, because I had to, because the first pitch of that baseball game was at the exact moment that our radio show was
right,
starting
of course,
as well.
Yeah.
I believe Jen had to sort of do play-by-play of what I was doing on the air live, and then I threw the pitch, ran, shook hands with the catcher, who was not amused because I checked first base. There was no runner at first base.
Oh, right.
And then I ran over to the like camera well, and I put on some headphones, and I started doing TBTL from the side. And then we went to a commercial. Then I had to run up to the like seats where all the fans were, all the TBTL listeners, and continue doing the show. And one of the issues when I was doing the show was my mom had shown up at the game with my dad and with David. And you know how the seats are at the stadium? When you're not sitting on the seat, it flips up so that it doesn't collect rainwater or whatever. So my mom got to the seat. She put the seat down.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
But she didn't realize in the time between she put her putting it down and when she went to sit on it, it had flipped itself back up.
Oh.
So she went to sit on the seat. There was no seat. And she just fell to the ground. And then she thought that DFTB had, like, sabotaged her seat. So she was yelling at him. He could clarify. And I think he can confirm this or remind me of the details. But basically, in the background of the first couple minutes of the show, when I'm in the stands, you can hear my mom in the background yelling at David.
Oh, no. That seems like such a weird accusation. I mean, I can't imagine David would be literally the last person on earth.
Yes.
Not even in your family, but the last person on earth
yes.
who would think that that's a funny prank, let alone to one's mom.
Yes, it made no sense. She was having that rush of embarrassment
sure,
that
yeah,
people have.
Yeah.
And it was making her be crazy, I think, in that moment. But anyway, all of that to say, I had so much other bleep going on
mm-hmm.
that I wasn't vibrating after throwing the first pitch, but I was vibrating after driving that truck,
mm-hmm.
shaking. And I get into the locker room or whatever, the area where I'm changing out of the suit, and our producer from CBS, Anthony, he goes, dude, what happened to you during that post-game chat? You were being weird. And I was like, I'm shaking. That's why.
Oh.
I have so much adrenaline going. Okay, so
was
then,
he really that rude? Did he say you were being weird, or was he just kind of like, hey, you okay? Or
He I don't think he said you were being weird, but you know, we have that kind of relationship where he's not I don't think he feels the need to sugarcoat stuff with
you. Yeah, right.
Like, I don't think let's just say he's not an Andrew Walsh. Mm. He's not a managing Luke's experience type of person. He's right. He's just saying what he's saying, and it is what it is, which is okay.
That's
we have
good.
That
that's
kind
refreshing.
Of relationship.
Yeah, that's nice.
But it was like, I just didn't realize how jacked up I was going to be on adrenaline and then trying to talk. I've never had to be interviewed right after I did something that had me at the absolute edge of my abilities. Now, here is where I'm going with this story, though. Afterwards, I met up with a couple of 10s, Perfect 10, Nick Armies, and his lovely girlfriend, Leanna. They were at the show. And I went and I met them, and we got a drink. And Nick had videotaped my drive. And he had posted it on Facebook. This is the Facebook element. And I had no idea what it looked like, right? And he showed me on his phone. And I swear to God, Andrew, I am going maybe 4 miles an hour in the truck. I'm going so slow. Like, embarrassingly slow. What felt in my mind as I was driving the truck like I was balls to the wall was comically slow. It was like slower than when they're just like when the not professional drivers, like, you know, they have these big crews, and when somebody from the pit crew is just moving the truck to a different part, they're driving the truck faster than I was.
And does the truck have a speedometer, by the way?
No. Actually, you know what? That's a good question. I don't think it does, actually. But you'd think for all the dials and switches, I would have looked at that. I was always just looking straight forward when I was driving it. I don't think it has a speedometer on there. Maybe a tachometer? Anyway, this is why Carrie had to talk me down. Because
that's my wife.
Because after doing this whole thing, after all this buildup, after being so nervous, I finally, when I saw video of me driving the truck, and by the way, combined with how bad my post-game interview was, because my thought was, or my post-drive interview, my thought was like, oh, I'll just say some funny stuff. I don't care if the people in the stadium really get what I'm putting down, but I'll just do something funny because then it, like, I answer to a higher authority, and that is TBTL or CBS television. Like, but what I found myself doing in the post-game interview was slipping into this kind of talk that they do, because I was nervous and I wanted to get the crowd on my side, and I was coursing with adrenaline. But when I saw how slow I was driving the truck, that was when I realized there was no reason for me to be that adrenalized. And then I stopped the truck and back it up because I'm
did you get to see that on tape? Like, how did that look?
Not cool. Not badass.
But not terrible. I mean, that could have been like, that could have been a disaster. Then it's like, oh, I'm backing up. Oop, lurch, lurch. Oh, 17-point turn, backup turn. Like,
yes.
You know, it sounds like you actually did. You went back a little bit, and then you kept going.
But it's like, I just can't stress enough. If you're, and I'm sure many of the listeners, because this was on the Stens page, I'm sure, and maybe you have to rejoin Facebook to go see this video.
Somebody email it to me.
Because Carrie had seen it immediately. Like, she was like, how'd it go, babes? And then I called her and I was like telling her, she goes, yeah, I just watched the video on Facebook.
Now, what was her initial reaction? Not knowing any of this backstory or how you felt in your head, she said, I saw the video. Did you get a sense of what she thought of the video? Was she like, God, that was slow?
She did not say that. She was encouraging of me. She said, I'm trying to find her exact text to me, because what happened was we were texting and then I called her. And that was when I really laid it out for her. I was like, I'm really embarrassed because, like, I didn't do anything interesting. Like, I wish I would have either been worse at it or better at it or something. Like, I wish I would have either have been driven a little faster, driven in a way that actually looked a little bit cool. Like, no one's going to mistake me for one of these professional drivers. But, like, I just look so – it's really hard to understand unless you're in the cockpit of one of these things how hard it is to actually, like, really drive it and control it. And I didn't want to – mess something up or break the truck or hit the demolition car, or because also I knew if I did something really dumb, they can switch the truck off on me. I didn't want
that
to happen.
Think about that. Why don't you list the ways it could have gone worse?
It could have gone worse in a million ways, but that would have almost also been more epic, right? Like, I would have rather it was epically bad, like my boat crashing story, or somehow I kind of, you know what it really was, too? when I did the training school in Illinois, I exceeded my expectations. I actually went off of a jump and was kind of, you know, like impressed with myself, to be honest with you. And I've showed everyone who I've ever met since then the video. I will not stop showing it to people because it's my coolest moment. So that was where that I exceeded my expectations the first time, and I greatly underachieved my hopes. And then my interview wasn't even very funny. My interview was just a weird mess because I was so adrenalized. So I felt really and sort of embarrassed. But Carrie was very sweet, and she really talked me down. I can't find the exact text because there have been 85 million text chains since then. But she basically just said, don't beat yourself up over this. It's fine. And so that helped me a lot.
Yeah, I can't think of a specific example, and if I could, it wouldn't really compare to the stakes that we're talking about here. But if it means anything to you, I feel like you're describing emotions, and not just emotions, but the whatever chemicals are coursing through your bodies, through your body during moments like that.
Body.
I seem to have a stutter today. I'm trying to let's not focus on that too much. It'll just make it worse. But I know those feelings really well. And then also, you know, keep in mind there's a physiological aspect of coming down from that shit too. You know, like
right.
It's all
yes. I was crashing on multiple levels. And yeah. I walk outside. It's 90 degrees, 90% humidity. It's raining. I'm trapped outside the arena because I walked out the back door, which locked behind me.
Oh my god!
And I'm like, I'm getting rained on now. I'm talking to Carrie, and I'm just feeling kind of really bummed out about my performance. I just feel like I didn't nail any part of it. Anyway, she talked me down, then she sent me a text, and she said, I know it probably didn't register when I said this, but you seriously did not bring shame on the family, because I told her, I was like, I feel like I embarrassed our family with this. She goes, not doing it exactly right or perfect or badass or whatever is far more interesting and endearing, babes. It's more real, trust me. So that was nice. That was a nice thing to get, because I was just feeling really shitty about myself afterwards, which is a weird, you know, it's a weird feeling to have when I got this opportunity that is pretty rare. And I mean, I didn't do anything super terrible, but it just wasn't, I don't know, it just all felt like it was about a 4 on a scale of 1 to 10. And I wanted, even if I did a bad driving job, if I would have just like said something really funny in the interview, mm-hmm. I mean, I did yell Baba Booey, so that was kind of funny.
That's something.
One of the producers from Monster Jam, she said, what did you yell at the end? And I said, Baba Booey. Stern Show. She had no idea what I was talking
really?
About.
Really? That reference is decades old at this point.
I know, exactly, right? It's not even. And when I told Phyllis about it, she was like, I hope it gets on Stern. The problem is, this is not really broadcast. It's on, eventually, like, the real competition will be on Fox Sports 1, I think, but nothing to do with me. Like,
yeah, that stuff will all be cut out.
So me yelling Baba Booey is just, it's just, you know, it's just for people who are in that room. Maybe it's on the video. I also cannot bring myself to watch the video anymore.
You watched it all the way through once. That's all you
know. No, I didn't watch the interview part.
Oh, the interview.
Driving.
Oh, yeah.
I watched the driving part, and then I was like, that's all I can handle.
Yeah. No, this is all very relatable hashtag content to me, for sure. I mean, not the driving monster truck part, but just that that adrenaline, that feeling of not achieving it and then kind of crashing after that. But, yeah, like, you didn't bring shame upon the TBTL family either. I did see, though, how is Olive... Has Olive disowned you? Because she was the one who was kind of the most judgmental.
Yeah. She won't talk to me.
That's really weird.
She's been
weird.
Giving me the cold shoulder ever since I got home. Mm. And that concerns me
that's
as well.
That's rough.
Yeah. So that, you know what I think for me, the growing edge is being okay with things. I mean, I have done a whole monologue about this and on LiveWire and have clearly lost the thread on this. But like I talked for a while. My mantra was, and I know I talked about this on TBTL as well. My mantra was like, "What if everything wasn't perfect, and what if I was okay with that?"
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good opportunity for me to really challenge that and try and do that because it wasn't perfect. I wish I didn't stop the truck and back it up. I wish I would have driven faster. I wish I would have done a donut. I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller.
Where do you stand on rabbits, hats?
I like, you know, I felt, and then I was embarrassed. Again, I was really embarrassed. I thought, if nothing else, I'll be able to handle the post-game speech. It'll be the funniest one they've had. And it was just, my jokes kind of fell flat. They were missed. Nobody understood them, or maybe they were actually not that great. Maybe it's not on the crowd at Monster Jam Tampa. But it was just like, I didn't nail any part of the performance, and that's just what happened, and I have to just be like, okay, and then what? You know what I mean? Like, everything was not perfect, and I just have to be okay with it, because I was really not feeling very okay with it afterwards. Although it was very nice to talk to Nick and Leanna. They were very sweet and complimentary.
Yeah. I also wonder, like, your safety school joke is good, but again, don't know if that's the crowd. Like, I don't know if secondary education. Like,
right. Right.
And now I'm sound like I'm being an asshole. Like, I don't mean to be. I'm not trying to make a, like, I love monster truck rallies. I grew up going to monster truck rallies. Like, nothing speaks to me more than this. So I'm not trying to make it sound like everybody who is in that arena is somebody who doesn't get college jokes, but I also, I mean, right. if your Baba Booey didn't get the crowd going, I don't know that that was my safety school would have really gotten them turned on either.
Well, it's like, I don't know if they liked my Baba Booey joke because I was literally sprinting away from the truck. Right. And the host had, they told me later, the host had two more questions for me. I just short-circuited the interview. I was like, have a great night, everyone, Baba Booey! And then I just ran.
Just take control of your situation.
Yeah, I did, because I was just like, this lady is not going to get my jokes. The longer I'm out here, the more I'm going to embarrass myself. And the crowd just, I mean, the poor crowd was like, Gravedigger fires up. And those things are loud, as you know. Gravedigger starts up. These kids are probably like, Gravedigger. And then they're like, did Gravedigger have a stroke? Why is he going 3 miles an hour around this dirt track?
Like, why is there a little tinkle of water following this truck as it pisses?
That also stressed me out, because I was trying to make basically, I was trying to make a joke about pissing myself without actually quite saying it, because I was sort of worried that, I mean, it's supposed to be very family friendly, and sure, I don't want Feld Entertainment mad at me that I made a joke about pissing my pants, even though I honestly felt a little bit like I could pee my pants. Mm-hmm. It reminded me when I was like on deck, when I'm sitting there, you know, in the truck waiting for them to like announce, because I was sitting in the truck for like 10 minutes waiting for them to, and I'm out on the field with this thing. It felt like when I was played baseball for the Greenwood Boys and Girls Club, and when I would get called to go, I would be in what was called the double hole. So like, you know, when you're on deck, you're the next batter up. When you're in the hole, you're about to be on deck. And when you're in the double hole or snake eyes, you're about to be in the hole to be on deck to be batting. And when I would get in the double hole, I would start feeling like I had to pee so bad.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with urine in my body. I was so flipping nervous.
Yeah. And how did you ever get that when you were doing stand up? Or remember that one time you not all that long ago decided to try stand up again, doing nothing but crowd work for 5 minutes, as I think it was a Live Wire bit? Do you still get that kind of nervous feeling?
Butterflies, but not like I'm going to pee nervous. This was like I hadn't had that feeling since I was a kid. And I was having it sitting in that truck. And I also, like, it doesn't matter now. I mean, I've told the story. These details aren't that interesting, but like, I didn't buckle the helmet. I undid the safety harness because I was worried I wasn't going to be able to, because I knew I wasn't going to do anything dangerous. And I knew that I wasn't going to be able to get out of the restraints, because you're locked in like friggin' Hannibal Lecter being transported to Quantico or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I kind of was like, I had all this time sitting in there and I was making all these calculations. Like, I don't want to not be able to get the helmet off. I don't want to not be able to get out of the seatbelt. So I just slowly started undoing things. Oh, the other thing.
You come out like wearing like nothing but old fashioned underwear and.
Right. Those. I'm wearing a barrel.
You're wearing those socks with
like suspenders. Yes. I'm wearing garters or like garters, your socks, yeah, those things, right, that hold your socks up if you're like a business dude.
Right.
And then a barrel. Oh, the other thing, too, that really kind of like – the other thing that had me feeling very low right in the aftermath was they'd mounted a GoPro on – CBS had mounted a GoPro on me, and not like physically on me, but like in the truck on an arm that was pointing at me. And the cameraman said, don't hit this thing. Like, don't bump it when you're getting in the truck. And I was like, okay, I'll try. But it's really hard because you have this big helmet on, and it was mounted to the thing I'm supposed to grab. And the truck is like 10 feet off the ground. So it's mounted to the thing I'm supposed to grab to get into the truck. And so I didn't hit it getting in, but at some point when you have to do all these like hand signals to the basically the pit crew that you're ready to go. And when I'm doing one of the hand signals, I like bumped the GoPro. And my mistake was admitting that I did it, because I could have just acted like it was the vibration of the thing. But when we got done, we're watching the GoPro footage in the locker room, and I was like, oh yeah, I think I might have bumped the camera. And sure enough, I had bumped it so that like the leg, just the tippy top of my helmet is now cut off. Mm. And the cameraman was so mad, he stormed out of the locker room.
Really?
Because
yeah, he doesn't like the framing. Like you're looking at it, most of it's fine, but he doesn't like the framing on it now?
Yeah, he's mad because he was frustrated in the moment because we, because you know, the GoPro shot didn't turn out to his liking. Although having said that, it was also dark in the arena, so the lighting wasn't great. And I think it's fine. I think we can still use it. But he was really disappointed in the shot. He was so mad he stormed out of the locker room. So now imagine that. I did my drive. It wasn't great. I did my interview. It was kind of an S show. I yelled Baba Booey and ran off the floor. And then the cameraman is so mad about the shot, he leaves the locker room. Nothing felt like it went right with this for me.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know, I know I'm just repeating myself and covering the same ground, but you know, most of the time, like we did Livewire in that hotel room, and that show was a really fun show. And everybody who we run in, who I ran into afterwards, who was at the show, was like, great job on the show. I think Drew McFrizz might have even said he thought it was his favorite Livewire he'd been to or something. Or somebody said that to me. I'm used to being nervous about something performative and then doing it, and typically it goes fine. It usually goes better than I'm thinking it's going to go, and I usually get good feedback, and I feel good about myself. And this was one of those times where I didn't quite hit it out of the park. It was fine. It'll work. But I didn't have that rush of like, oh, I did better at that than I expected to.
Yeah.
I did a little worse at it than I expected to. And that was like a shitty feeling.
Yeah, that is kind of rare for these kinds of things. With you, and also I think with most people, when you get yourself really worked up for something, it usually goes better than you think it will. And this one didn't. But, you got your what is it? It's kind of a knitted text thing on your wall hanging there that says everything is going to be okay, right? You have that little frame.
I do. It's actually just a poster that's framed that says everything's going to be okay.
Oh, that's not sewn? That's not fabric?
It's not. It is not cross-stitch. You know, a long time ago I had some of that cross-stitch that was like rap lyrics when that was in style. Remember that trend?
Yeah, I don't remember you having that, but okay. I remember the tweets.
I thought maybe that's what...
You had Kanye tweets. I know that. Those were...
Yeah, and somebody mailed me one. Somebody bought me one of those. Oh. Might have even been Vanessa. Somebody bought me a cross-stitched Kanye tweet from like Etsy, from the person that was doing those. And I used to have that framed somewhere. But no, the everything's going to be okay is actually made by one of the, I think it was our early TBTL posters, a place called Rowboat in Seattle. They were kind enough to help us make something or other. And they also had this everything's going to be okay poster, which I bought and framed. And I should just stare at it right now.
Yeah.
And let it sink in.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. This is how gripping that story was. We took a break right on time, like 14, 15 minutes into the show. I'm just sitting here talking to you. I look down. We're 7 minutes past the river. And I'm not saying that we have to hurry up. I don't have anywhere to be. But holy crap, how did we get 7 minutes past the river? This was a good story out of
takes,
it because it just like
everything takes longer than I think it does.
Yeah.
Telling the story took longer. It took me longer to go around the dirt track.
You're
going to
tell Carrie,
like,
yeah, no, I mean, I just zipped through this story on TBTL. It's just like so fast. Yeah. At one point, I had to back up and clarify something. But then I just got going again. And then you go back.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
And you look at the tape and we're past the river. But no, that's a compliment. That's not a dig.
Yeah, no, I have to embrace that side of it too, which is that it is a better story. It's a better TBTL story, probably, that it didn't go perfectly than if I was like, yeah, man, I did a donut and it was totally boss. And then then everyone was like, you should be a driver. And then like a high fived them. Yeah. And then I was a cool guy. Like that's a less interesting story than what really happened, which I just told in excruciating detail.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
You can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week I hope that it's from a female. Oh man, it's not from a female.
Oh, and also I didn't have to drive Black Ops Special Forces, so that's a win.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Peace and love. Peace and love to that truck.
But you just sort of felt like it was a very militaristic and somewhat jingoistic.
Yeah, well, mostly it's not famous.
Yeah.
It's not a famous truck, so I felt like it'd be better for the story to see Gravedigger, because even if you don't know anything about monster trucks, you've probably heard of that, of Gravedigger. Or if you're a, you know, a person of a certain age, you at some point in your childhood probably turned on TV and saw Sunday, 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 we'll sell you the whole seat, you'll only need the edge. So you have some awareness of it. So I thought it was better for that reason. And also, yeah, I'm not into like militaristic culture. Like that's not my, I wasn't like, oh, cool, I get to drive the modified Humvee. Like that's not interesting to me.
Right. So. Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. Soldier Fortune Black Ops.
Oh, yeah. Soldier of Fortune Black Ops. That's what it's called. Soldier of Fortune Black Ops.
It's actually called Soldier Fortune for some reason. I don't know.
Newman would say it's Soldier Fortune.
It doesn't say Soldier of Fortune. It just says Soldier Fortune.
Soldier Boy, tell him.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to hear about some of these emails I've been saving up for you?
Yeah.
Welcome home, by the way, for real. I meant to say that at the beginning. I'm glad
thank you. Yeah. I might actually come down this week. I might come down. My biological brother is going to be in Seattle. The one who is in Philly, who I had only met once in my life.
I thought you were making a joke. I thought you were just calling.
No, I call him Adam from the attic.
Right.
And I've got a whole sound effect for him. No, you know, I've told that story back in the day when I went to Philly. But that like half-brother of mine from my biological father, who I've only met one other time, is going to be in the Northwest. And so this week I might come down to Seattle and he and I might hang out a little bit. And so maybe on that day I'll do the show at your house if that's cool.
Yeah, that sounds fun, yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited to not be in a hotel room somewhere doing the show. It's nice to be home.
Maybe we can do a Hey Dummies together. We haven't done that in a long time.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right. Okay. Let's see here. So I told you before the show that we have a couple of good emails about slingshots. You and I were talking about how I had a slingshot, or what you call a wrist rocket.
I
Rickrolled my wrist rocket this weekend. and I got a couple of emails, both from guys who were talking about how slingshots kind of got him into a little bit of trouble as a youth. How about this one from Brad, who says, "This reminded me of a childhood incident. My parents both worked when I was a kid, and I inexplicably let some teenage rocker dude... No, I'm sorry. They inexplicably let some teenage rocker dude named Tony babysit my brother and me. We came home from school one day, and Tony ushered us to the backyard and told us to get on the roof of the house. We got up there. He hands us wrist rockets and informs us that we're going to have to defend ourselves from some people. He had beef with some other rocker dudes who soon showed up at our house looking for a fight, and they were quickly scared off by a barrage of wrist rocket projectiles, many from Tony, best babysitter ever." That reminds me of like stories. My friend Tony, this reminds me of the type of places I grew up. You know, it's kind of like I told you in the country, bunch of guys who are kind of like up to no good, like mullets down. I'm assuming these guys had mullets. I don't know. I don't know what era this is. But in my era, it was like a lot of guys in like ripped up Metallica shirts and mullets. And I remember Tony, I was not here for this, but you know, my friend Tony, who had a huge impact on me and my taste, and he was one of my early friends. But when he was in high school, he was living in Canton. We lived apart. But he told me about some time there was some sort of beef between him and his friend Nathan. They were on the same side. There was like two gangs of boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt like they had to get together and settle something. And so they started acquiring weapons, some sort of homemade weapons, right? Now, just to skip to the end here, I don't think any violence ever happened. I think these things sort of happen so that the kids can go around creating weapons and imagining what they would do with them when the rumble actually happens. But I think, hopefully, more often than not, these rumbles do not happen. But I remember Tony, you know, he's a musician, and he was telling me how he was like all proud. He had this big... Oh, we were definitely in high school because he was driving this big windowless extended van. And he had created some sort of weapon out of, like, I think microphone stands, something that was like a pole with a hook on it. And he was all proud of his craftsmanship. And then he picked up somebody else, on the way to the supposed brawl, and they have some sort of handmade weapon. And then he gets to Nathan's house.
It's like
house.
The Warriors.
Yeah, exactly. And then he gets to Nathan's house, and Nathan comes trotting out of the house carrying nothing but a bowling pin. And they were all just like, oh, shit. Like, they had all been in a movie. I know, they had all, I remember it. And, like, I wasn't there. I just remember Tony telling me about it at the time. And they were all proud of their weapons until they see Nathan come out with a bowling pin. And they're just like, that's the best. But then whatever happened, you know, I don't think violence ever actually happened. But anyway, can I read one
more?
Those
were like those weird, like, that whole meet me after school, you know, kind of like, mm-hmm. and we're going to fight after school. That whole thing in childhood where there's like it has been established there's going to be some kind of rumble, but like the planning of it really ruins the kind of like anger element.
Yeah, right.
Like you get in a fight because you're mad, but then if you're like, we're gonna fight, hold on, I'm gonna send you an Outlook invite 3 days from now
right
at 4 p.m meet at this place to rumble, and you're just like, you're not mad by the time you meet at that place to rumble. I remember I fought a kid named Brian Gator after school once because it had been established during the school hours that there was going to be a fight between me and him, and it was going to be later on. It was going to be after school in this certain location. And I remember showing up for the fight not being mad anymore.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and also you get into your own head. Like, if you're really mad, if two kids are really mad at each other, and then something happens and there's a spark, and then one person just, like, punches out of anger, it's like a spur of the moment. You might even think, my God, what did I just do, right, when everything calms down later. But when you're – maybe this is just me because I wasn't a fighter. But when you're like, okay, in 3 days I'm supposed to – so I'm going to ball up my fist like this and just like punch him in the face? Like you just – and right. then his fists are going to be coming at my face? Like there's just like – you get in your head and you start thinking about what you're doing. It just doesn't make sense. Again, I was a big wuss. I didn't get into a lot of physical fights like this.
Yeah. I – The worst, I feel really bad because I'm not the hero of this story at all, but like there was this kid when I was in grade school. I know I've told this story before, but when I was in grade school and I was a crossing guard, I wanted to be a crossing guard because at the end of the year, all the crossing guard kids got to go to Fun Forest in Seattle for a day of amusement park hanging out. That was your reward for doing crossing guard duty all year. So I really had my eyes on the prize and I wanted to do that. I was crossing guard. There was this kid, Sam. Kind of a heavy set kid. Honestly, you know, he was, I think he probably was coming from a pretty messed up home life and probably just wanted to make friends. He was kind of a, I think he maybe got to the school in like fourth or fifth grade or something. But I remember he had said something mean to a girl who I liked, a girl named Jessica Baker. And so I decided I needed to like defend her honor or some bullshit. And so I basically decided I was going to like ambush Sam. And I got some other kids in on it. And in my mind, I was on the side of truth and justice because he had been mean to a girl and I liked the girl. And I was now going to like this was going to be retribution for that. But I was on crossing guard. And so when this girl named Terry Wilfong was crossing the street, I was like, yo, Terry, guard this corner. Here is my vest and helmet and flag. Guard this corner. I got to run and fight Sam Landit. And so I basically like ambushed him in an alley, which was crazy because like how did I even get him to go into the alley? I think I had some kids in on it, and then I was like about to fight with him, and then I think I kind of just pushed him into this wall weakly, and then these bigger kids showed up, like high school kids drove by and saw us surrounding Sam and took his side and then just beat the shit out of us for trying to beat up Sam, which was really in the retrospect fine, but at the time I was really mad about it. And I got kicked off a crossing guard. I didn't get to go to Fun Forest because the one derelict, like the one thing you can't do when you're the crossing guard is give your uniform to Terry Wilfong, who's not even trained, and then just go try to fight Sam in an alley.
Terry hasn't even taken the oath. Are you kidding me? Exactly. You can't wear the colors.
The nice watch.
That reminds me, I was there's a Reddit, a subreddit called Instant Karma, and I was scrolling through that this weekend, just like watching video after video of somebody maybe trying to start a fight and then either getting their ass whooped or falling down a hole, or like somebody pushing somebody else off a bike and then crashing their own bike seconds later in a much more dramatic fashion. It's an entire thread that is just like this very what's the word I'm looking for? Very refreshing shots of people getting what's coming to them. Hey, I want to read you one more. I'm having trouble with words today, man. You're the one who said that you were feeling groggy. I was feeling great, but but I'm listening to myself talk. I can't even form words. What do you think they're going to say on Facebook? Here, I want to read to you this email from Eric about slingshots. He says, my father, back when he was healthy, bought me a wrist rocket with a ton of BBs. To show me proper form and to lay down the law, he aimed the wrist rocket at the birdless sky and told me, under no circumstances ever do this. And he fired into the air. He hit a passing seagull who was apparently in the wrong flight path at the wrong time. He killed it instantly, and as we watched it fall into the bay, he tossed the slingshot back at me and ran into the house. My own father left me to send this bird to its ocean rest all on my own. He later told my mom that I killed the bird.
Eric. Oh, my God.
That's an amazing story. You say my father back when he was healthy. So, Eric, I hope everything is okay with your dad, although you should probably talk about this with him and how it scarred you forever. Here's another story from Eric. A while later, in the woods near my friend's house, my friends and I were shooting G.I. Joes with the wrist rocket when I decided to put a broken arrow into the BB holder. Long story short, I realized my mistake immediately, and as the arrow leveled itself with my thumb, I panicked and let go, sending the arrow through my hand. Can you picture that?
Whoa.
You have a slingshot, and you're like, oh, instead of using a marble or a BB, I'm going to use this sharp half an arrow, and then it gets a wrong angle, and it just goes right through the hand that's holding the slingshot.
That's holding the slingshot.
Oh,
so
my
it
God.
Flew, like, down. Instead of flying out, it flew down. And through the hand.
He says, it got stuck halfway through, and with the slingshot dangling off my wrist, I ran home crying to my mom.
Trigger alert.
She took me to the hospital, and the doctor simply shook his head, removed the arrow. He gave me some sponges and iodine to clean the wound myself. My mother learned the full extent of my vocabulary as I lost my 13-year-old mind on the doctor for what I viewed as malpractice. Anyway, that's from listener Eric. Wow.
Wow.
That's rough.
Why do you think it was malpractice?
Well, I think that he just thought, like, you're just sending me home with some iodine and some things to clean this. I think he probably wanted, I don't know. I don't know what 13-year-old kids. Did he say he was 13? Let's assume this kid's 13.
I remember
13.
When I was camp, my friend Peter Williams, who was kind of my Tony, except that he wasn't a rocker dude, and I was his Tony. but he's a cellist, and he actually teaches cello at the Suzuki School in Seattle, and he's an amazing musician. This is really the centerpiece of his life as a kid. And we were camping with his parents, and we were whittling. His mom, who famously once said, I will dig through shit if I have to get half of your tooth.
Oh, yeah, right.
I broke his tooth with a Nintendo controller. We were camping, and we were whittling. We were really into whittling walking sticks. And I remember watching in slow motion as he was trying to whittle, I think, like an eagle into the top of this walking stick. The knife blade slipping. Again, trigger alert. Everybody, trigger warning, I should say. And he just, like, went thwack with the knife right into his index finger on his hand that he would use to press down the strings on the cello. And I remember his, like, I mean, it was obvious. And we're in the middle of nowhere. And there's a knife halfway through his finger.
Oh, my God.
And it's like, I know for a fact, though, he was more worried about his mom yelling at him than the pain.
Yeah.
Because, like, she was like a very, I mean, I love her, actually, Diane. She's a sweetheart. But she was not shy about letting him or me know when we were out of line. And she just looked at him and freaked out. I remember we had to drive to the hospital, wherever that was. And it was just like they had to give him all these stitches. He never got the feeling back in that finger. But he
really? But he's a professional cellist.
Yeah. And he was able to overcome it. But I remember that happening and just being like, oh my God, like freaking out, because I'm pretty sure the whittling had been my idea. So once again, I was like, I just was always waiting for the time when I was gonna be told, you cannot come over, I can't play with you anymore,
right?
My mom said, you're not allowed to come over here.
Yeah,
that's right. Most of our lies were about her not realizing how I had done some dumb thing to Peter,
right? That he had done it to himself,
right? Exactly. That's why the tooth thing, he was so mad because I had broken his tooth with a Nintendo controller, which I threw at him because he was stealing bases on me in RBI baseball. But then he had to say that he had gotten hit in the mouth with a basketball.
Yeah, I remember when you told me that story. I was so mad at you.
If she knew that I snapped his tooth, I would have been like banned for life. So it's out, Diane. It's out.
So first of all, just to recap this story, and then we should probably go. I just want everybody to get all the details of this. He's just stealing bases, in baseball essentially playing the game better than you. So you get mad, yes. So you throw the controller at him. He ends up losing a tooth, which is probably painful and humiliating. But then the cherry on top is he then has to tell a lie about how he chipped his own tooth to his mom. There's no justice for him at all.
Well, and let's add this. The other – they had to put a fake, you know, half of a tooth on because his tooth was halfway there. Like the root was fine. It just was – it was literally snapped in half, which he didn't know had been broken because it was broke so cleanly. So they put a fake tooth on the bottom half, and that tooth was never the same color as his other tooth. We used to call his fake tooth Old Baleen Whale because it was kind of grayish and dead.
Right. So there's the final
He also
insult.
Has never looked right.
And you guys made fun of him for something that you did to him. Now
I made fun of that tooth.
Now he's got old brown tooth with the numb fingers. We should get him on the show.
Yeah, we should actually. I wonder if he would. I wonder if he would do it. And also, it'd be funny. It would be funny, his recollection of all these events versus mine, because I'm sure that I'm definitely getting some things wrong. I mean, all you can do is try to remember things, to the best of your ability. But I'm sure he has a different version of a lot of these events, too. So, as Dionne Warwick once famously said, that's what friends are for.
That's right.
Break your tooth, make you lie to your mom, and then go around with a... Did you re-examine this song as part of your whole "Didn't We Almost Have It All" kind of deep dive?
I think so, because she does say "for good times and bad times." I think I just talked over it. So, really, what's this kid's name? Your Tony?
Peter.
Hey, he signed up for the bad times too. You know, that's what friends are for.
This song was a real super group.
Yeah.
This is Stevie Wonder.
I remember the video, wasn't it like?
Also, Elton John is up there, and I think Anita Baker.
Didn't it have almost like a Live Aid kind of feel to it? Like
yes.
People on stage together. I remember this being an event. I remember I was on vacation in Florida at somebody's house who I didn't know, friends of my parents, and they had kids around our age, and they also had an indoor swimming pool. And ooh. I remember that. I remember everybody gathering around the TV to watch this.
Elton John is looking. He's looking like Bono. He's like a Bono hat on. Mm. I have to. You got to give. What's his name? What's his real name? It's like Reginald Dwight or something.
Oh, I didn't know that. Elton John? I didn't know that.
Yeah. You got to give Elton John credit because he was very bald. And then he was just like, yeah, now I'm wearing hair pieces. Like the photo history of him not having hair was well documented. And if I were Elton John and I was that bald, I would be like, well, I can't get a toupee now because everyone will know it's a toupee. But he was like, no, I'm Elton John. I don't care.
And also, he's just a big wig guy anyway, right? Kind of a flamboyant
right, exactly.
wig
he's
guy.
He's already like, kind of setting that up with the, like, you know, sort of over-the-top, like, I don't know what you'd call it, Marie Antoinette-style wigs and things
right.
like that.
And whatever he wore in
the
Tommy.
The bitch is back.
I remember that, yeah.
Wait, was he? He was in Tommy? I thought that was Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd, or Tommy was the Who.
But
he's in it. He plays like the a competitive pinball guy, somebody that goes up against
Tommy. I was trying today,
the reigning champ.
I was trying to figure out a non-offensive way to introduce you as bitch, he's a cow, but there was just no way to do it without it being kind of weird. Have you heard that song going around?
No, what is it?
Excuse me.
Sorry.
Bless you.
Holding that in. Thank you. Bless him.
There's this Doja Cat, who is this woman. I guess her father is a South African, like a actor in South Africa who's sort of well known. But this song is like everybody's obsessing over it. It's her on a green screen in her like room or something singing the song about being a cow. Oh, you know what though? I wonder if I was just playing the wrong one. Hold on a second. Okay, here we go. This is the real one. Give it a second. I'm surprised this didn't get nominated for Song of the Summer.
Yeah,
Bitch, I'm a cow. Bitch, I'm a cow. I'm not a cat. I don't say meow. Bitch, I'm a cow. Bitch, I'm a cow. Bitch, I'm a cow. Bitch, I'm a cow. I go moo.
This will be in your head for the rest of your life, by the way. The video is quite something. Just like, just doing weird stuff in front of a green screen, and then there's like the backdrops, and she's also wearing a bathing suit in a lot of the shoot, and she's eating a burger, and she's drinking a milkshake, and talking about. I guess this song is like more popular than any of the songs off the new Nicki Minaj album. Which is creating a certain amount of friction.
I'm reading about this now on Quartz, you know, the online publication Quartz.
And yeah. What are they saying?
Headline: We're calling the song of the summer 2018. Bitch, I'm a cow. A bovine inspired banger has become. I'm going to read this. I like the style of this. This is Sangeeta Singh Kurtz writing for Quartzy. A bovine-inspired banger has become so viral in the past week that some are joking that it overshadowed major albums by Nicki Minaj and Ariana Grande. Moo, more widely known by its chorus line, Bitch, I'm a Cow, is the creation of 22-year-old artist Amala Zandil Dalamani, Dojo Cat. They want to highlight this lyric. Bitch, I'm a cow. I'm not a cat. I don't say meow. Got the methane. I'm a farter with my farmer.
Oh, yeah.
McDonald.
Yeah. I feel like it's a mixed message. But, you know, you don't hear about women singing about their farts enough, too. So, good for Doja Cat. All right. Let's wrap things up here. Did you write down any show?
Oh.
Any show titles?
You know what? I didn't.
I wrote down Rick Rolled My Wrist Rocket.
Oh, okay. All right. That's something.
And Baba Booey.
Booey. That might be a little confusing for our listeners. Want to go Rick Rolled My Wrist Rocket?
Rick Rolled My Wrist Rocket.
Okay. I feel like it should be something truck related, though. Sorry, I'm writing and not thinking at the same time.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back if we said anything funny about the... How about this? Wrist roll my Rick Rocket unless you can think of something better between now and when you post the show.
That sounds good. All right, and then for music, do you have anything on your mind? What's a good... What are you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, I guess we just kind of played the song. I was going to say we could go out with the Moo song, but we just sort of played it.
Yeah.
Also, I haven't listened through to the whole thing, and so I don't know. Maybe there's stuff in there that's... sort of not good for our audience. So I don't know. Let's see. It's a Monday.
I typed in, you were feeling shame, so I typed in shame into my iTunes. I got Ain't That a Shame by the Frankie Valli version, but there's also a Desmond Decker. Do you like Desmond Decker?
I don't know if I know him. There's a song called Shame Shame by Dr. Dog, too, that I like.
Let's take a quick listen to this.
I've played
Desmond
that on the show
Decker.
Before.
So he's like kind of, he's credited as kind of like the earliest ska guy, but just calm down. I know how that sounds. I'm not a big ska guy, but I like this era of stuff.
Oh, right. No, I like this. Let's do this.
Okay, there you go. Oh, and the name of the album is Rudy Got Soul. So it's a little shout out to Rudy as
perfect.
Well.
Perfect. The kind of original, I don't know if you'd call it dance hall or what that early, what's that very famous like sister something? Dum 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 dee dum.
Oh, I know that
dum.
Song. I don't know.
Da dum 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 dum. Like, there's that era of like, I guess you call it dance hall ska. There's another name that
rock
is escaping
steady,
me.
Maybe.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, I don't know.
Kind of like, I'm not a big reggae guy, but there was the stuff that sort of preceded reggae a little bit, or the early stages of it, that I just love. So I'm down.
Yeah, I like this. I like the tone of this. All right, so we'll go with this.
Cool. Thanks for listening, everybody. It's nice to be home. I will, and Andrew, I assume, will be right back here tomorrow, as long as he doesn't injure himself whittling.
We'll see.
I'll be right back here tomorrow with more imaginary radio for you. Until then, enjoy your Monday. Go Mariners. Go eat a bagel. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all. Shame.
power out.